In one of his most important speeches for the international community yet, President Trump had some strong words for North Korea and its leader, Kim Jong-un.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
The president spoke this morning before the United Nations General Assembly for the first time. The president's warning follows growing hostility between the U.S. and Pyongyang as North Korea continues to develop nuclear weapons and missiles to deliver them. President Trump also repeated his campaign promise to scrap the Iran nuclear deal.
The Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it, believe me.
Cecile Shea joins us now. She's a former U.S. diplomat and now a senior fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Cecile, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks. Nice to be on air today.
Before we get into specifics of North Korea, Iran, and elsewhere, big picture, what did you make of this this opportunity, this address by the president before this big global audience?
I thought it was really a missed opportunity. The president's, particularly the president's first ever after being elected address to the UN General Assembly, is really his chance to tell the rest of the world that the U.S. still wants to be a leader, that the U.S. intends to use its immense wealth and military apparatus for good and for peace in the world. And instead, a lot of this speech came off as a, frankly, as a campaign rally type address, particularly the early part of the speech where he was talking about how high the U.S. stock market is and how his administration has cut back on so much federal regulation. That's not really of interest to someone who's tuned in from Mauritania or from Laos. They all were listening for the big picture of what the president tends to do during his term to secure and provide prosperity and peace for the world. And so on that level, I think the speech, sadly, was a miss. I think he could have really done a lot more to speak to the global audience rather than to the U.S. audience.
I've seen some observers point to a theme that might have gotten overshadowed by the totally destroy North Korea comment. The president kept referring to strong sovereign nations being the key building blocks to human peace and prosperity. And really, that word sovereignty being a key, individual nations seeing to their own interests first. What did you make of that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because up until this point, he has not really said much about what his overarching philosophy of international relations are. So that was the most spelled out philosophy that he has stated so far. And interestingly, it's similar to what President Obama's philosophy was. And President Obama, in his first speech at the UN General Assembly in 2009, had a similar message, but said, frankly, a bit more elegantly, where he noted that he, like all leaders, was responsible first and foremost to his own citizens and to his own countries, and that that was the basis of how the world was organized. But then President Obama went on and defined that in a much broader way, noting that when other countries prosper and do well, that is good for Americans. So I wasn't too surprised that there was an underlying message, since President Trump has said that his underlying message is America first. What was disappointing was the lack of sophistication in how he presented it. He seems to look at politics, at international relations, as a zero-sum game. For the U.S. to lose, other people have to do worse. And nothing could be further from the truth. When other countries prosper and are more secure and are more stable when their people are healthier, the U.S. economy grows much more quickly. The U.S. is less likely to need to use military force. The U.S. is better able to predict the future. So on that level, I think that his centeredness on sovereignty was a concern in that he defined sovereignty and what is good for the, he didn't define sovereignty too narrowly, but he definitely defined what is good for the American people quite narrowly.
And on issues like trade, that's something obviously he talked a lot about in the campaign. That idea of a zero-sum game was front and center. And I think that came up again today, the idea that the United States has lost out in multilateral trade agreements. What did you make of what he had to say about international trade in this speech?
Well, that's really an excellent example of how his definition of American sovereignty was different from President Obama's. President Obama believed that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a very large trade arrangement that would have involved 10 to 12 countries, President Trump has now pulled us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But President Obama believed that that agreement was good for America, that it would make America more secure, and that it would make America exceptionally more prosperous. And at the same time, it would also improve working conditions in other countries, and it would make other countries more prosperous at the same time. So he defined belonging to that type of a large trade agreement as being very good for the U.S. and not in any way taking away from America's sovereignty. President Trump, I think because he was playing to certain parts of his base during his campaign, people who are opposed to trade agreements, because it's true that on the micro level in some communities they can cause harm. He made a promise to pull out of the TPP. He has pulled out of it, and he continues to say that he believes that that is in the best interest of the U.S. But the fact is that his entire cabinet believes the opposite. The people around him all know that pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership is actually making the U.S. less wealthy and in the long term potentially less secure.
Talking to Cecile Shea from the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, looking at President Trump's address to the United Nations General Assembly earlier today. Cecile, let's get to North Korea now. The comment from the president that we've been hearing through the day, really, that if it came to a military response to North Korea, the United States would have to, quoting, totally destroy North Korea. We expected, of course, a message addressing the North Korea concerns and nuclear program and missiles there, but totally destroy North Korea has definitely gotten a lot of attention.
It has, and it's partially because of the way that he said it and where he said it. You know, the U.S. policy throughout President Obama's administration and previous administrations was, if the North Koreans should attack another country, that we would destroy North Korea. So that is nothing new. We have always had that as a deterrent. We have always warned North Korea that should they attack another country, we would destroy them. But we have said it quietly. We have said it without emotion. And we have not made it into a campaign issue. And the North Koreans have noticed. I mean, obviously, we have a problem right now. But it seems that the kind of bellicose rhetoric that is coming from the White House is actually exacerbating the problem. Previously, there would perhaps be one missile test or two missile tests a year. The number seems to have increased. The North Koreans answer this kind of rhetoric with more strength from their side. I think the other problem that President Trump perhaps needs to realize is that while we are clearly dealing with some sort of sociopath, a sick person, and I give President Trump a lot of credit for noting that the people who have suffered the most under Kim Jong-un have been his own people, with famine and with just horrendous human rights abuses in the country. So I was glad that he mentioned that. But the problem is that while Kim Jong-un may be crazy, he is not completely irrational. And so we need to ask ourselves, why is he continuing on this nuclear program and on the missile program? And the reason is because he believes that that is his safety valve, that is his deterrent, keeping the United States and South Korea from invading North Korea. The nuclear program, combined with the massive amount of artillery that is aimed at Seoul, is, from the North Korean perspective, the reason that the U.S. and South Korea has not invaded the North. Now, we may think that is just not true, that the U.S. would not invade North Korea without cause, but that is how they look at it. So when the U.S. threatens to invade North Korea, and President Trump's remarks today will be seen that way, it just is going to cause the leadership in North Korea to want to expedite their nuclear program, because to them that's an insurance policy. That's a deterrent to the U.S. taking action.
We're talking about President Trump's UN speech with Cecile Shea, former U.S. diplomat, now a fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of the president's speech at the United Nations today? What's your reaction to his threat to destroy North Korea if they threaten the U.S. or its allies? What kind of message do you think the president is sending to the international community, for better or for worse? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation about President Trump's UN speech with Cecile Shea, former U.S. diplomat, now a fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. What did you think of the president's speech, his remarks about North Korea, the Iran nuclear deal? What do you think about the role of the United Nations? Should the U.S. Work more with the United Nations on global hotspots, or go it alone more than it currently does? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Cecile wanted to talk about China a little bit. President Trump talked some about UN resolutions regarding North Korea, but also worried about countries that were still trading with North Korea, maybe supplying technology to North Korea that might be relevant to its weapons programs. Was there a message to China here?
I think in part, I'm glad that he also thanked China and Russia for voting with the U.S. on some recent resolutions. I think that was helpful. You know, the underlying problem with China is somewhat similar in a strange way to the problem that we have with the North Koreans. The Chinese are not happy with the North Korean regime. They certainly agree that it destabilizes the region, makes the world less safe. But what they absolutely positively worry about is that should the North Korean regime fall, that the U.S. and South Korea would move into North Korea, there would be a unified Korea that would be very friendly to the U.S. and very negative toward China. And so what we need to figure out a way to do is to have very quiet, I would say secret talks with the Chinese, saying if things go bad in North Korea, this is what we will do. We will give you authority over X and Y. We would like to do Z, and do some pre-planning to lower the anxiety among the Chinese. President Trump's speech today is going to cause a lot of angst in Beijing, because they are going to think that the U.S. is preparing to invade North Korea and to set up shop on a very long border that occurs between North Korea and China. And so the U.S. needs to find a way right away, first of all, to lower anxiety on that score, but more importantly, to find a way to cooperate in a detailed plan for what exactly we are hoping will occur in North Korea. Are we looking for regime change? Are we looking for a soft landing? Are we looking for this regime to stay in power but to simply stop forward momentum on its nuclear and its missile programs, and how can we work with the Chinese on those things? And if we can lower some anxiety there, maybe then China will agree to cut off some more of the trade and other assistance that they are giving to North Korea.
Let's bring on a caller now. Mike is with us in La Crosse. Mike, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that, you know, I voted for Bill Clinton, you know, a long time ago, and this diplomacy thing just doesn't work. They keep advancing their nuclear programs. At what point do we say that we have a good leader in there that's the right man for the job right now? You know, China doesn't seem to want to help. You know, at some point, you know, when do we say enough's enough? I mean,
Mike, thanks for the call. I get your point. We've been negotiating with North Korea a long time. That hasn't prevented the development of this nuclear program, Cecile.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I was working on CATO, the Korean Energy Development Organization, back in the 90s, and it was frustrating then. This is a very frustrating problem. You know, one of the frustrations, I'm sure, of President Trump is he works in a business where you can fix things. You know, if the engineer comes to you when you're building a high-rise and says you can't put the bathrooms there, the plumbing won't work, you move the bathrooms, you rejigger it, you make it work. Sometimes in foreign policy, there are just no good solutions, and this is one of them. All we can keep doing is trying to slow him down and work with him and try to prevent what at this point sadly looks to be somewhat inevitable, which is that he is going to find a way to miniaturize nuclear weapons. Now, why do I say sadly inevitable? Because there is no good military option. If we try to take any type of military action against North Korea, the immediate counterattack will involve destroying Seoul, which in turn will mean destroying the 11th largest economy in the world, which will have enormous economic repercussions. I mean, first and foremost, it will be a humanitarian, you know, humanitarian loss of just unimaginable proportions, probably the biggest humanitarian crisis since World War II. But there would also be a huge economic price to pay. And so that's the problem with seeking a military option. And so we keep looking for ways to talk to them, ways to bribe them. Frankly, that's what a lot of our programs are ways to bribe the North Koreans to stop their program or to slow down their program or to let in inspectors and hope that we somehow find a way forward on this that prevents a nuclear war. That was the reason for President Obama's clear statement that should North Korea ever use these weapons, that we would destroy North Korea immediately. That was a powerful deterrent. But I totally agree with the caller. This is a really frustrating situation. And it's the frustrating part is there is simply no good trustworthy way out of this mess that we're in. There are only some choices that are less dangerous than others.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Cecile, what is the next step you'd like to see taken when it comes to North Korea?
I mean, I really think that the Trump administration needs to enter into very quiet talks with China about what is our view of the future. What are the United States' intentions? What can we promise China that we will or will not do to make them feel secure enough about their border that we are going to respect the integrity of their border with Korea so that they will do more to help put pressure on this regime?
We'll leave it there for now. Cecile, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
We've been talking to Cecile Shea. She's a former U.S. diplomat and now a senior fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. She joined us today to talk about President Trump's speech today in front of the United Nations General Assembly, talking about North Korea, sovereignty, and more. Still time to share your thoughts over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.